Question for you. When you feel good, when you feel healthy, do you feel more sexy? When you're taking care of yourself, does it help improve your relationship? Well, you're in the right place today on Sex, Love, and Elephants because I've got an amazing guest and new friend, Una Duncan, for a spirited conversation just to give you a glimpse of why I love this woman already. Her book is called, spoiler alert, some salty language coming up. Her book is called Healthy as Fuck. In the US, they renamed it Ditch the Diet. Her wonderful 28-day transformation program to help you transform the way you eat, the way you think about food, and with some great 28-minute workouts you can do is called Fit Feels Good. You're going to get a special offer if you choose to join that after listening to this podcast. Her expertise, I would say, is on habit coaching. So you're about to hear an extraordinary conversation between two women who clearly adore each other. Also, you should check out her podcast, Grit, Guts, and Some Woo-Woo Shit. And we'll link to that below as well. We'll link below to the episode she interviewed me on her podcast, where you're going to hear a little more behind the scenes of my life, my romance, and my philosophies you might enjoy as well. But without further ado, the wonderful Una Duncan and I are going to talk about habits, health, food, how she went from being an overweight, sedentary, lazy smoker party girl to someone who values fitness, and she's not crazy about it. And you won't hate her. You'll love her. She inspires. She doesn't make you feel like you can't do it, because guess what, everybody? You can. Without further ado, here's Una. And here we are, Una. I am so delighted you're here. I had an incredibly great time on your podcast. We'll link to that below, everybody. My beautiful Sex, Love, and Elephants audience, I had the pleasure of being a guest on Una's podcast. Click below and listen to that and subscribe to her incredible podcast. But today, baby, worlds are colliding. The fitness, habit coach, fit feels good, gorgeous girl, and the whatever the hell I am these days, Buddha sex therapist maniac, are going to talk about a number of things. But let's start off with something really intriguing, I want to learn more about, which is one of your own wedding vows to your beloved and why it relates to what you do in life as well as in business.
Yeah. So my husband and I, we wrote our own vows, and some of them were kind of, you know, a little bit tongue in cheek. Like, I promise I'll always put the right lid on the Tupperware containers, because that's like a primary source of conflict for us. But one of them, which was very serious, was I promise to do my best to stay healthy for you. And the reason that we have that there is just, I'm trying to think of how personal to get with this. There are people in my life who have married people maybe that are a bit older than them, or people who are not older than them, but really didn't take care of themselves. And that will drastically impact your quality of life. If your partner is not able to travel, if your partner is not able to enjoy a healthy sex life, if your partner is not able to be energetic and enjoy all the things, you know, it will age you very quickly if your partner is not able to do those things. Also, in staying healthy for your partner, I also think of that as I will do my best to be the best version of myself, so that you're married to someone who is the best version of themselves. It's kind of like promising, I'm not going to just be like, okay, well, now I'm just going to relax and let everything go. It's like, you know, when they say, if you want it to feel like the first date, you got to act like the first date. And part of that is putting your best foot forward. And a big part of that is keeping yourself healthy. And I'm not even just talking about, you know, aesthetically, although of course, you know, if you stay healthier, you're probably going to look a little bit better and younger. But I'm talking about the energy and the vitality that you're bringing into the relationship. So, you know, an image that I sometimes tell my people is that, you know, if you picture two relationships, and in both relationships, they love each other so much. They're so connected. They're each other's best friends. And in one relationship, they're also really freaking tired and stressed and low energy. And they're just like always feeling stuffed or starving or kind of hungover, or they just can't get out of bed, or they've got insomnia and, like, you know, they've got health issues. And they love each other so much, but that's their physical state. Now picture the same couple. They love each other so, so much, and they are in peak physical condition. They are so full of energy and vitality, and they are so ready to tackle life because they feel so good in their body. Now, which is going to be the relationship that you want to be in? I'm not even talking about the physical state. I'm talking about what is going to have a better relationship between those two. And really, that's why taking care of yourself, your physical vitality, it's absolutely critical for your relationship, is one of my primary beliefs.
That's absolutely fantastic, particularly for this audience who are primarily interested in relationship health and well-being. And so often, see if you resonate with this fitness and food coach. The complaint is about, I want them to be healthier. I wish they would eat better. I wish, and it's like, I'm well acknowledging, as are you, we may be in quite a dichotomous relationship in fitness and food, where one of us eats, you know, vegan and beautiful and pure and exercises, and the other one is, you know, Hawkins cheesies and whatever, and, you know, exercises actually having to get up and find the remote control. But I'm also talking about a general trend. Do you see this too with your clients, where there's often a lot of wanting the other person to be different and not so much looking in the mirror and saying, who can I be for my partner? Which your vow was kind of about. How can I bring my best self to you, my love?
All the time, all the time. And I will acknowledge this is real, that if someone is trying to, for example, make a big transformation in their health and wellness, and their partner is, often there's resistance. And I actually give my people a script, because if you have support with the people in your life, it is going to make your life so much easier, right? But your people in your life will probably have some resistance because they often don't see a reason for you to change. They are like, you're fine, you're good.
I love you the way you are, babe. You look gorgeous.
Totally. I love you the way you are, which is a lovely thing to say, but it's actually sort of fucking irrelevant, because it's not about you. It's about me and the changes that I want to make. So I tell people, you know, give people the speech and say, and this is to kids as well, to kids and partners, and say, hey, I am going on this journey. I'm trying to make some changes in my health and wellness. I know you love me exactly the way I am, and I appreciate that so much. But for me to feel good, these are some things that I've got to do. I want you to know I'm not going to do anything crazy. I'm just going to start to shift these habits. And this means so much to me, because I need to feel this way, because blah, blah, blah. So you really, you anchor it into how important this is for you. And then you get really specific. You say, here's specifically what I need from you. Honey, I need you to be available on Thursday nights to look after the kids so that I can go to my salsa dancing class. I also need you to not offer me a glass of wine when I tell you I've had a bad day. I need you instead, what would be so helpful is if you offered me a foot massage. Kids, I need you to not bitch about the vegetables in our new food. I need you to make your own lunches so I can pack my healthy lunch. So you get really specific and you say, if you guys can help me with this, I'd be so appreciative. Thank you very much. I acknowledge that this is different, and we can still have pizza on Friday nights. It's not all going to be crazy. Reassure them, because they're going to get scared. Your husband might be like, oh my God, is my partner never going to sit down and have a glass of wine with me ever again? That is a huge loss for them potentially. So you have to acknowledge that you're asking something of someone else when you're making these changes as well.
You know what just came to mind is, did you ever watch the TV show This Is Us? Toby goes on a fitness binge, I think CrossFit, and the actor himself dropped a lot of weight. And on the show, it was really a mixed experience for each of them on either side of that, of one person making choices. Neither of us want to make it sound simple. Like, we just make a choice to get healthy. It's so bloody hard. But looking at what is our dynamic and what is the feeling of threat for us when our partner wants to make a healthy change. And as you'd well know, and as the couples listening should know, what's our own psychology around? But if you get better, what does that mean? Like, will I be good enough for you anymore when you're svelte and thin, or you're eating a very different way than us? The other thing I want to underline really quickly that Una so wisely said is, because we're changing our life, we can't, well, we may expect in our quiet little inner hope voice, but externally it can't be, hey kids, so now you're all eating nothing but what I'm eating, right? You said, yeah, we can still have pizza, whether or not you choose to have the pizza or you make your own healthier version. But changing your behavior is 100% your responsibility. And although we would love our partner to get on board, and sometimes they will, especially if you've got some mad couple skills about really discussing this stuff, but we need to do it without them and without the eye rolling when they reach for a bag of chips and a Coca-Cola. You say something about that? That must come up, I presume, in your groups. Una runs an amazing 28-day transformation program we'll talk a little bit about at the end here. And I hope a lot of you listening will check it out. Maybe the right jump start for you right now. But what do you do with people in your transformation program when they're like, Una, I'm doing all the right things and I'm really rocking it and I'm packing my lunches to go to work. And my wife, she's eating all the old things and she made my favorite cheesecake for the family and it's killing me. How can I make her stop? What would you say?
Oh, well, I mean, I do think that's where you have the conversation with your wife and you say, listen, you made that for me. And I know you did that out of love and I appreciate that so much. That's so great. I actually had a situation like this where one of my lovely clients, she had lost so much weight. She was so proud of herself and she was just beaming about her life and all of her accomplishments. And then for Christmas, her husband got her the Cookie of the Month Club.
Oh, snap.
Yes. And the beautiful thing is that her husband was like, you've done such a good job. I want to reward you and say you deserve this. And what she thought, and she thought it was a like, fuck you, I don't believe in you and everything that you're doing. It was a massive source of conflict between them. But this is just for her to explain and to see it from, you know, I know, Cheryl, you talk about the clock, seeing it from both sides. So from his side, he was like, hey, honey, you're done such a good job. Here's your reward. And for her side, she was like, you hate me and everything I stand for now. So they had to really kind of talk about, what does this mean that you got me this gift and tell me what it means from your perspective. And now I'm going to tell you what I need and why this gift didn't land the way you thought it would. And I love and appreciate all of your support and your celebrations of my success. And I also want to talk about Kate and Toby for a second from This Is Us, because the thing about Kate and Toby is they met at a fat support group. You know,
group. Overeaters Anonymous sort of idea, right?
Exactly. So it was actually a massive, being overweight was a huge part of their initial bond. And it was a huge part of their identity and their relationship identity. If you consider, and I don't know if this is part of your philosophy, so tell me if it's not, but what I've heard in the past is there's the one partner, other partner, and then there's the relationship, which is its own entity. And often the relationship itself will have an identity to it. And for sometimes that identity for them involved being like, we're the fat couple. You know, we are the couple that always has the best Super Bowl snacks or whatever, right? For my husband, Dylan and I, we met at a bar. We partied so hard. We had the wildest wedding. We actually had quite a couple identity as being the like party loving fun couple. Now we are reexamining our relationship with alcohol and it's a little bit of figuring out, oh, okay. So if that's not our couple identity, what is our new couple identity?
Right. Beautiful. I love this. Okay. This is so cool. I can't believe we talked about This Is Us, but it's what it arose. It's such great. Love that show. I think it's on Netflix now. If you guys never saw it, start at the beginning. It'll make you cry. It's going to get a little personal. I think I have permission to. If not, I'm taking it anyway. First of all, how long have you and Dill been together?
Oh, you know what? We're coming up on a big anniversary. I think we're coming up on 15 years of marriage.
Wow. Fantastic. Congrats. How has this beautiful wedding vow of, you know, I want to bring my healthy, better self to us. How has that generally played out? Because when I was doing a little extra research on you and listeners, Una and I had the absolute delightful opportunity just a few days ago to meet in person. Turns out she lives a very short ferry ride from me on Vancouver Island here. And we went for a hike and we were like, blah, 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 blah. You know, shared journey, shared crazy. But I did a little more research today, sweetheart. And apparently you were a lazy, sedentary smoker, actor, playwright who hated exercise and maybe didn't like good food. So first of all, I want to know that because it's so inspiring to know we all begin somewhere. And secondly, was that also who you were, the partying bar couple? Like, were you also not really into the food revolution and fitness that you now so cherish and helps hundreds, if not thousands of people embrace with you?
This is such a great question. Oh my goodness. Yeah, Cheryl, I was not one of those girls who was doing like cartwheels in the playground and like doing gymnastics. Like never. I've never been able to do a cartwheel. I've never been one of those.
Me
like
neither.
Here we go. High five. Yes. I was definitely more of a kid who had dreaded gym class. I would have always rather been reading than doing any, I didn't even want to do skipping rope or whatever. I was not ever drawn to doing anything physical and anything deliberately physical. And, you know, as I hit, you know, puberty and beyond, the thought of physically trying at something in front of my peers, like I couldn't imagine anything more horrifying. I really was never drawn to that at all. And then I was a smoker and then I liked to party and I didn't want to be one of those fussy people about food. I really like was eye-rolly about that. It was very much, I like to consider myself a foodie. So I was always like, I'll have the weirdest thing on the menu and I'm not going to be fussy. You can give me anything. So I really like this is all you see me creating this identity, right? And then so there are pros and cons to the identity. A con being that I gradually gained weight and enough that I was starting to, and it was so secret. This is all very shameful because I identified as a feminist. So I knew that I was supposed to accept my body no matter what, and that diet culture had no place in my brain. And I was actually a fat activist. And so the thought that I was actually a fat activist who was kind of a little bit not loving my belly was a huge cognitive dissonance. And I also felt like, wow, I'm really successful in all these areas of my life. And I am slowly gaining this weight that I don't want to, and I can't seem to do anything about it. And I did try to do these things, but I did try very covertly because I had the shame about it. So I sent away for some green slime. They remember in the back of magazines where they had like, send a self-addressed envelope to P.O. Yeah, Box, sketchy,
right
sketchy,
next
sketch.
To the sea monkeys. Yeah, in the cartoons or the comic books.
But the thing is, when you are secretly ashamed of something, you are so prey for those send a self-addressed envelope to that back in the day. And today it's to all these freaking Instagram influencers who are telling you to buy like protein tea and start some sketchy, all of that. And we are so vulnerable to this because there is, people have so much shame about this area of their life.
Here you have, I have one for you. I just made it up, but this will change your life, your mental state, and drop belly fat. Goat placenta. Let's put it out there and we're going to make $1 billion not helping anyone but our bank account.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I actually was on a podcast the other day where they had a Goop or Poop. They said, is this an actual product sold by Goop or is it poop? And some of the products that are actually sold are unfreaking believable. So anyway, not to denigrate that specific brand, but I will say that it is a symptom of a larger problem in the fitness and wellness industry and our vulnerability to these things because we have so much shame about it because it's something that we feel like we can't control. And that was certainly where I was at. And so I was trying all these things, and it wasn't until I sort of dropped all that and really discovered the habit loop. And I didn't realize that this is what I had discovered. So here was my big fitness revolution. People always want to hear like, and then I, you know, did the Toby thing and I went to CrossFit and become a CrossFitter. No, here's what happened. I bought a treadmill off a garage sale. You know, you can always get old fitness equipment because nobody uses it. So I got a treadmill, got some boyfriend to move it into my house. And then I made a deal with myself that I could watch whatever mind-rotting, horrible TV as long as I was on the treadmill. And I didn't have to run or anything like that because I wouldn't have been able to. Just walking and not even like, you know, pump walking with the arms and all that. None of that. Just walking on the treadmill. And I watched Maury Povich and Jerry Springer.
Oh, say it's not so.
Oh, I did. Oh my gosh. But listen, I was so like wanting to know who the father was or, you know, watch Jerry beat up the Nazis or whatever that I would stay on that treadmill because it was just fascinating. So here's what I did. This is why this worked is because in doing so, I created a positive association with exercise. Because I got to watch all my crappy TV that I never would have indulged in before because, you know, I was this like feminist activist intellectual, right? So anyway, so I'm watching all this crappy TV. And then one day I was like, and it was just curious. I was like, I wonder if I could jog for an entire commercial. So remember commercials, right? They were 30 seconds long. And I wondered.
Yeah, kids, there was these things called commercials.
Yeah. Okay. So I was like, if I bring up the speed to like 5 or whatever, and I jog for a whole commercial, can I do it? And then it was just like, it was just out of a sense of curiosity and playfulness. And with that sense of curiosity and playfulness, I started to like push my envelope, totally in the privacy of my own living room, of my own little ritual. But in doing so, then I started to get a little pleasure out of pushing these things until finally, you know, one day I graduated. I was like, what if I went to a fitness class? Again, that was terrifying, absolutely terrifying. And, you know, I'm at the very back and I'm facing the wrong wall half the time and blah, blah, blah. But again, I had no ego attached to it. I was just kind of seeing, and it was a pleasant experience. So that I kept going and then et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, years later, I'm at the front of the class. And then years later, I'm on the stage and then et cetera, et cetera. But the way that this started is because I use the habit loop, which is trigger. It was, you know, afternoon, no one's around. Jerry Springer's on. Behavior, I go on the treadmill. Reward, I get to know who the paternity test was or whatever. Like I get to have my fix of these really addictive shows. And now when people are like, oh, I just don't feel motivated. I'm like, don't. You will not ever feel motivated. Don't motivate yourself. Bribe yourself. Make it feel fun and exciting. And that is when you listen to your podcast, you listen to your jams, you do it with a friend, you do anything to make it more fun. And that's your project. And that is a project, Cheryl, because, and I bet this is something you can talk about too, when I tell people you need to figure out a way to make your exercise or your eating salads or whatever they're working on, you need to make this feel so pleasurable. I'm like, so what gives you pleasure? And often there's just like blank, I don't even know anymore. You know, like, what's pleasure? I just got to tick this off my to-do list so I'm not, you know, gaining weight. Like, and there is no pleasure there. It's just a duty. It's heavy. It's something they got it. And that will never work ever, ever, ever. It's like if you try to get people to have sex and it's like a duty. Ah, it's that time of the week again. I got to have that sex. You know, that's never going to work. It's never going to give them the love life they want. And it will never give you the body that you want if you are exercising out of duty, if you're eating salads because you're supposed to. It's never going to work.
This is so important psychologically, and it's absolutely genius the way you're presenting it. But just to make sure everybody nails this in, it wasn't the treadmill activity that was enjoyable in any way Mm-mm. or motivating. Mm-mm. At first, it was the pairing it with the guilty pleasure reward of "Be still, my heart," Jerry Springer. I had a lot of admiration for you till about 3 minutes ago. No kidding. I will confess,
that's fair.
My guilty TV pleasure, which no one but my little sister knows until now, was Duck Dynasty. Do you know this thing, Duck Dynasty?
Oh my god! Like a trashy?
No. Okay. Yeah, no. So freaking humiliating. It's a bunch of duck hunters in, I don't know, I don't remember where, Arkansas or somewhere. It's a reality show, and they're millionaires because they created a duck whistle, whatever, that brings the ducks, and then you shoot the poor little fuzzy things. Anyway, it was their life and their business, and it was so tacky and funny and weird. I was trapped in a hotel room in Toronto between flights, between gigs, and there was nothing on, and I watched one of these things. And then it was like one of those binge days where some low-grade TV show was running them over and over. So I hear you. But the thing is, the Duck Dynasty, the Jerry Springer, is the pleasure, not the treadmill itself. And then, see if I got this right, when you turn into, hey, could I jog for a commercial? There was more like a gamification or a challenge or a playfulness. Say a bit about that, because it wasn't you going, I feel organically like I'd like to jog now.
Maybe it was a little bit like that, but it was just more of a really lighthearted, let's see. And I had zero attachment to whether I could or I couldn't. I was just as ready to be like, whew, that backfired. Never going to try jogging again. Who would do that? That was what I expected. But then I did, and I jogged for a whole 30 seconds. And I was like, whoa. And then I started to like just this infinitesimal little shift of who I thought I was. Just tiny. Just enough to like, oh, I wonder if that's an edge I could test again. And then we have this, you know, we talked about identity. And so people are like, yeah, but how do I shift my identity to being a fit person? And the truth is that we have this self-perception. I mean, you know more about this than I do 1,000 times, Cheryl, but like we watch ourselves. And so I shifted my identity by watching myself do this thing that I thought was previously impossible. I jogged for 30 seconds. And then it just changed a little tiny bit. And then I watched myself continually get on that stupid treadmill. Then I was like, I guess I'm an exerciser. Holy moly. And then it just started to like shift so gradually, almost to my surprise, because I watched myself do these things consistently. But the only reason I did these things consistently is because I made them pleasurable.
Right. So can you repeat again for everybody? I want them taking notes. The habit loop is the 3 steps.
So your habit, if you're trying to build a new habit, you need to build a very specific trigger that's going to set off that habit. And the best way to do that is to build it off of something else in your life that is already an established habit that always happens no matter what. So it's something like when I get up, when I brush my teeth, after I walk the dog, after lunch, after I say my prayers, like whatever it is, those things that you always do, you never even think about them, they happen, all right? And then you build on the behavior, all right? After I brush my teeth, I meditate, for example. And then you're like, okay, now how can I make, because meditation, and you, I'm sure you can talk more about this than I can, Cheryl, like how can I make it feel rewarding? So you got to figure out a way to make meditation feel rewarding. Or for example, when I wake up, I drink a big glass of water, and then my reward is, after my glass of water, I have my coffee. But here's the deal. I never have my coffee until I've drank my water. Do you understand? You can't just go, if I was allowed to watch Jerry Springer all the time anyway, I never would have got on that treadmill. It's because I saved Jerry Springer for only treadmill time that it worked.
Right. You made it conditional.
That's right.
If this, then that.
Exactly.
If I do this, then that. So one of the things I teach people is to have a Friday night date night. It doesn't have to be Friday night. It's just when hubby and I do it. So in a way, the behavior that is already happening is on Friday evenings, we both get home from our respective works, me upstairs, him elsewhere. That always happens. Generally in our life, Friday is a free evening and we both get home. So as esoteric as that sounds, like kind of vague, it's not like brushing your teeth. Friday being free and we're both home at, say, 5 p.m. is the trigger in a way for the behavior of doing a date night and then planning it. The good thing about this is, unlike maybe jogging or lifting weights for some folks, date night is inherently pleasurable as well. But we need to build the habit or we fall into the doom state of relationship complacency. So I love that. So everybody listening can create one habit right now for one tiny moment of fitness or wellness. And I know you've got some 7 tips we may get to, but I also loved that you have your 3 biggies in your TED Talk, the big 3 behaviors: eat your veggies, move your body, get enough sleep.
Are those ones that I identified for the TED Talk? That's interesting.
Yep. And I loved them.
Oh, good. Okay. So in my book, I talk about the 7 habits of highly healthy motherfuckers. So this is...
Love it!
There's so much you can do for your health. And I think that because we're all, maybe me more so than other people because of my algorithm, but we're pummeled with all of this health and wellness stuff. Like, oh, okay, I should be eating more goji berries. Oh no, it's celery juice now. And oh my gosh, I got to fix my posture. And oh, I got to remember to get my omega-3s. And oh, I'm sitting too much. And blah, blah, blah. And it can just be like, nag, 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 all of these things I need to do. I'm screwing up. I'm not doing all the things. I'm not getting outside enough. What about my vitamin D? Blah, blah, blah. Okay, so we can freak out about all of that. Or you can focus on these 7 things that matter. Like, that's the 80-20 rule. This is the 80% of efficacy, 20% effort, right? 20% effort is going to give you 80% of your results. Are things like, fill half of every plate with vegetables. If you do that, it takes care of your caloric control. It takes care of your vitamins and nutrients. It takes care of so much. It's just like, just so many more vegetables. Every diet, if you look back to, you know, stupid diets of the 70s and the blah, 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 like all, every diet cycle we've been through, and we've been through a lot, Atkins, the zone, the, oh my gosh, name a diet. Like, there's so many that keto,
low carb, high fat, low fat, no fat.
Exactly. They basically all have the one thing in common: if eat way more vegetables than you are. And then they add some little gimmicky thing, but it's basically like vegetables, eat shit tons of vegetables. So fill half of every plate with vegetables as volume is one of them. And then what else did I say in the TED Talk? I talked about, oh, moving consistently. So here's the thing. It doesn't have to be, you know, right now I feel like the common stuff that everyone says, like, you've got to lift heavy weights. If you don't like lifting heavy weights, you don't have to lift heavy weights. What you need to do is move your body consistently. Just build the consistency of the habit. And it can be walking. It can be figure skating. It can be running. It can be swimming, like dance, whatever. Just all you got to do is that consistency. That is 80%. Once you have that consistency down, then great. Then we can start to talk about, all right, well, let's start to work on this modality and that modality. But like, until you are consistent, don't work on anything but making it consistent and pleasurable. That's your only job right now, is make it consistent and pleasurable. That is the 80% effectiveness there. Yeah.
Now, could I ask you to define, because it's probably a bit of a sliding scale, what you mean here by consistent?
Great question. I would say for consistency, I mean, I could probably dredge up the, recommend, I think it's like 150 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical exercise a week or whatever. What I think is consistent, it depends. So you could do 3 half-hour sessions of intense exercise, or 60 minutes of like walking a day would be another guide that I would say is consistent. But I would say between 3 and 5 days a week of moving at least half an hour of intense, like you're sweating, you're out of breath, or an hour of you are moving enough that you would feel like you'd want to take off a layer at room temperature.
Right. That is so helpful for people who are like, but what version of the 80 different recommendations of consistent? 3 to 5 days a week, 30 minutes hard and or 60 minutes effortful where you'd want to take off a layer.
Yeah.
That's so helpful.
But you don't have to be huffing and puffing.
Yeah. I want to share a quick story. One of my besties, my very besties, really working hard with bodies, diabetes stuff, et cetera, et cetera. And she's very motivated in the fitness department. And she was going to a gym in Vancouver 4 days a week, small group personal training, working out really hard, not doing so well with her food. And I was so impressed and so proud of her that she was getting her ass there in her busy life 4 times a week. And then for various reasons, the gym changed, half closed down, or the trainers she loved moved away. So she decided to shake it up. And she looked in her community also to save money because she's in an industry that's been shut down a lot lately. And so money's not so much there. Founded her local community center, a Zumba class. She's done 2 of them so far. Absolutely freaking loves it. She says she's the worst dancer in the room. There's like these little old ladies that are killing it. And she's like feeling like the big floppy one. And she loves it. And when I contrast how she talks about Zumba class to going to the gym, I think, was a real point of pride for her. I was very proud of her because she freaking did it consistently. And that's excellent. And a lot of us should do that a lot of the time. Now she also talks about having a blast and the music and her lighting her up. So she'll probably bring weights back in at home, but it's rejuvenated the move your body part because, as you're saying, pleasure, fun. Oh my goodness. You can have fun while you're also sweating, including horizontally, people. I am a sex therapist. Come on, get that heart rate up. No more nipple, nipple, crotch, good night. 5 minutes. Come on. You can burn a few calories that way too.
Absolutely. That is a great exercise. And I will also say that if you are doing exercise that you love and you feel pleasurable, it just gets you in your body. And then you are so much more ready for a healthy physical relationship, because most of us kind of live like, you know, in our heads, entirely in our bodies. We're just kind of dragging along with us like a old sock or whatever. And it's all aching and you're like, ugh. And then your partner says sex and you're like, what? You know, because you're living here. But if you're living like in your body and you've got, and I mean, just physiologically, circulation going to all parts of the body. I mean, this is why sexual health is health. And so this is why staying healthy is a huge part of just being healthy in that area as well.
Beautiful. So you've got 7 tips. We're working on 3 tips right now. Eat your veggies, move your body. And the third one, which I think will surprise a lot of people, does not surprise me, is get enough sleep. You want to say something about that?
Oh my gosh, totally. So especially because I specialize in women in their 40s and 50s, and it tends to be in a time of life when there are sleep interruptions. And I can't overemphasize what a dramatic impact this can have on your health. And all the women listening to this are like, no shit. No. So, because they know if you are underslept, you're, you know, way less likely to want to work out. Plus, you are going to crave energy dense foods because you're looking for energy. You know, so often I have clients who will say, I'm really good during the day. I, you know, blah, blah, blah. But then at night, when the kids are finally asleep, or when I finally get to, I've done all my tasks, I've checked all the boxes, I sit down on the couch and then it's just snack time. And I'm like, okay, I get that. There's a whole bunch going on there. A lot of that is because you've deprived yourself all day. And so you're like, it's my time, it's treat time. But another big part of that, my friends, is that your body is tired. You're tired. Your body's saying, I need energy. And you're like, fuck you, body. You're not going to sleep because you haven't had a moment to yourself all day. This is it. And so your body's like, okay, well, you better give me sugar, salt, and fat then, because there's no way I can stay up for another second longer if you are going to make me stay up. Your body's desperate to go to sleep.
And we've also got decision fatigue, especially if you're relying on the poor advice of willpower all day.
Yeah.
You've willpowered a bunch of no's and made a lot of decisions you're proud of. And your decision fatigue is so fatigued at the end of the day. It's like, I could have said no to this at any other time. And now I'm just like, I don't even care.
No, you don't care. Absolutely. You get the fuckets, is what I call it in my book, fuckets. The other thing is that a lot of people really underestimate how much sleep they need to function. So for example, there's so many, and you know, we're both in the entrepreneur world where there's a little bit of like machismo about hardcore work ethic and, you know, I who needs sleep? I'll sleep next lifetime or whatever. And people are like, yeah, I only need 5 to 8 hours of sleep. And then I get up and I cold plunge and then I run a marathon. I'm like, snore. But anyway, I will say that most of those people are about as full of shit as the people who are leaving the party be like, I'm fine to drive. Like, and I'm actually saying that very realistically, because they've done studies of people who are on chronically about 5 hours sleep. They are, their cognitive function, their reaction time is about the same as people who are like legally around the limit of alcohol to drive. You are not as smart as you think you are when you are sleep deprived. It's the same thing as having a couple of drinks. You're like, oh, I'm not drunk, but you're still kind of talking a little louder. You're still a little bit less inhibited. You might not realize it, but you are. And same thing as having less sleep, you're not at your best and you don't even realize it.
No, as I like to say to folks when I used to see private practice clients is there's a reason sleep deprivation is literally used as torture to break people down when you want them to just collapse and tell you everything you want. That's a pretty sobering thing to hear, but it's accurate. So everybody, seriously, maybe you didn't necessarily think that this goddess of fitness and food and many other things would say sleep more, but also don't you just want to smack the people that get by on 5 hours sleep? Not because they do, because they do. But I'm like, imagine how great you'd be if you got 7 or 8. Imagine how much more clarity, how much more breathing space in between, maybe in addition to the intensity and the admirable accomplishments, you'd feel better, be calmer, and you'd actually complete more in a shorter period of time because your brain function would be so much better. So better sleep. We could do a whole other podcast on that. I think we probably should. So there we go. We've got 3 of your many tips. Eat your veggies, move your body, get enough sleep. And we're big on threes here at Sex, Love, and Elephants because my model is, the 3 keys to a great relationship is intimacy, communication, and conflict resolution, thrill, adventure, cherishing your partner, planning dates, having fun, and sensuality, attending to your sensual life. But I am more than happy to hear more of your habits because you have 7 of them. If there's any more you want to share for today, some or all of them, because people that listen to this podcast are interested in actually doing the work to create change. That's why I adore this audience and people who aren't like, yeah, I know that sounds really good, but, and of course we can all feel that way, everybody, including me for sure. I want to, but at some point, when you want to create a new habit, start with a small one. Una's giving you some great tips on how to anchor it to something you already do.
So there's a couple of things I wanted to talk about that you just said there. One, when you hear yourself say, oh, yes, I want to, but, ooh, that's when the juiciness happens because the but, the next thought that happens after the but, that's your limiting belief. Yay!
Yay!
Now you know what it is. So for example, if you're like, oh, yeah, I know. I really want to get in shape, but I'm in menopause. So you just can't get in shape after menopause. Ding, ding. So this is your awesome opportunity to go ahead and Google postmenopausal women in wicked shape. And then you can be like, whoa, damn, that is 100% possible, right? So you're just putting a little crack in your belief. And then you're going to hear yourself, yeah, but they have amazing genetics or whatever. And then you could be like, you know, Google it. Like, who do I know? Who doesn't have amazing genetics? Who's achieved this? Yeah, but they don't have a crazy job like I do. However, so it's great because, you know, I have a chapter of my book called Break Up With Your Bullshit. And it's, if anyone's listening to this, and they're like, oh, but that's all true. And you're taking away, like you're picking on me. I don't mean to pick on you at all because we all do this. I do this. I've watched myself do this. This is why I'm talking about it. And we all do it. The reason that I'm calling it bullshit, or you can call it like belief systems or your bullshit story or something like that, it's just great because then you can kind of separate and be like, oh, that's what I believe. And as long as I believe that postmenopausal women can't get in wicked shape, of course I'm never going to be motivated to go for longer than a week. It's beautiful. As my one of my amazing therapists said, it's AFGO. It's another fucking growth opportunity. You had to shine a light on your limiting belief, which is amazing. The other thing that you brought up that I wanted to say, make it so small. So if people are like, if you ever hear yourself thinking, I'm not motivated enough. Well, one, I'm like, okay, no, it's not that you're not motivated enough. It's probably either that you've made it too big, way too big. You've decided I'm going to run a 5K every day or whatever. And really, it should be like, okay, and on the and the days that you want to run 5K, that's amazing. On those days when you're like, I'm ready to go. And that will not be every day. Not for anyone will that be every day. And on the days that it's not, when you're like, oh, it's raining, my legs still hurt from last time, blah, 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 you're still going to lace up your runners. This is because it's a habit, right? Trigger. It's 6 p.m. behavior. I go for a run. Reward. I listen to my podcast. I talk to my girlfriends, whatever it is, right? So if you get the trigger, it's 6 p.m., behavior, oh, I don't want to go for my run, but you need to complete that habit loop because every time you complete the loop, you're moving towards automaticity, towards this just being something you do automatically. You don't even think about it. It's just who you are, right? But every time you get the behavior, the trigger, and you don't do the behavior, if you're like, yeah, I'll do it tomorrow, you are moving away from automaticity. You are moving towards this always being having something that you have to try to do, to remember to do, to whatever. And that's just mental load we just don't have access of, right? So make it small. So the days you can't deal, just go out for a walk. Just even put on your runners. Just even do a few stretches in your living room. Make it as small so that you, it would be absurd to listen to your bullshit telling you you don't have to do it today because it's so stupidly small.
I love that. So a couple things that came up. One, when you're talking about, but I'm, you know, menopausal, but they've got better genetics, but they don't have a crazy life and three teenagers. Get off your butts. Basically, that's what we all need to do, people. Get off your butts. The other language I want to put out to complement what you're saying is I talk about it as there's reasons and there are excuses. Reasons are I've got a huge presentation due in 2 weeks and I'm working 12-hour days and my kids got the flu and I'm needing to nurse them extra. Those are legit reasons, but it's a very easy thing to tip that into an excuse. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I can't walk around the block. Mm-hmm. That's the bullshit.
Yeah.
The reason's legit, but the excuse, therefore I won't do the thing I've committed to, is the bullshit. So instead, I love what you're saying. Let's say I work 12 hours today and I'm nursing my sick kid. And maybe if there's a partner, they're away on business. They can't help. But the kid's old enough, they can be left alone. I could say, okay, honey, I'm going to go for about 20 minutes, just going to walk around the block a couple times. I'm going to be back. And then there's this incredible inner sense of what, everybody? Accomplishment. Integrity. I walked around the block a couple times instead of using my reason as an excuse to do nothing. So love that.
Exactly. And every time you do it, you're solidifying this identity of, oh, you're watching yourself. I'm someone who does what she says she's going to do. I am an athlete who goes out when it's raining. I'm someone who just does this thing. And that is the most powerful thing. When you start to build that identity, you know, say people don't get their goals, they get their identities. And this is what I tell people, how you know if you're just doing like a diet or if this is a real identity, if it's really your habits, if it's really your lifestyle, if it's really an identity, here's a clue. So if you say, are you going to eat, if you're saying like, I'm eating healthy, you'd be like, okay, great. Are you going to eat healthy 3 Tuesdays from now? And if your answer is like, I don't know. Like, it depends on what's going on. Like, if I have groceries, then yeah, probably, or like blah, blah, blah. But if you are someone who just always eats healthy, you're going to be like, yeah, of course. I always do. So why wouldn't I? It'd be like, are you going to brush your teeth 3 Tuesdays from now? Almost everyone would be like, of course I am.
Yeah, that is so great. I want to underline that as well. I did a wellness program for the last 6 months, which has been really tremendously helpful because I was really sick, stress sick, and put on a lot of weight because of it. Couldn't lose the weight because of the cortisol, which was accurate at that time medically. And through the program, I used to sometimes drink Coca-Cola, which is an evil drink, but it would help me, especially if I like needed to go on stage and I was super tired because I don't drink coffee. I'd have a Coke, the sugar, the caffeine, bing, Cheryl's on, boom, boom, boom. The crash was catastrophic. And through that program, I just became someone whose identity is simply, I don't drink Coke. It's a simple example, but it's so different, as you well know, and I want our listeners to know, to say, occasionally I indulge in a Coke and I'm okay with it, which is an okay choice. For me, it works much better that I just simply don't. I just don't.
Yeah, this is really interesting. This is a Gretchen Rubin concept, actually. She says there's some people who are moderators and some people are abstainers. So for some of my clients, they really would very much rebel if I said, never eat French fries again. They would be like, screw you. And then they'd eat all the French fries, right? Or they would like, binge on French fries and be like, okay, well, I'll start my no French fries thing tomorrow. So there's people who would really not work with that. However, they're totally fine to have 3 French fries. They're the kind of people who could have 3 French fries off someone else's plate and be like, I'm good. I don't want any more.
And that was satisfying and enjoyable. And I'm glad I chose to do it. Thank you for that language. Love, Gretchen. Abstinent people and moderator people. Yeah, I'm more of an abstinent person. Not because I'm afraid I'll binge and slide. I don't tend to do that when I've decided I have a certain identity. So I could have 1 Coca-Cola, but it's easier for me to say, particularly because I think that is just such a non-food. I'm like, I don't drink Coke. It's not about the Coke necessarily, people. It's about this identity of choosing whether this is who you are or whether it's a thing you're doing because it's good for you and you're doing it for this week. But the other thing I wanted to say is in terms of, I loved what you said about identity. The couples I work with, whether it's in the 3-month program or here on the podcast or elsewhere, one of my main goals is to develop in all of us an identity that I am someone that values my relationship and I make passion a priority. That's just who I am. It's who we are. It doesn't mean we don't neglect it for a month and a half when we're moving your aging parent into our house and things are upside down. But overall, it's so much who we've become that when we've got mom or dad settled and things are a little less chaotic, we're going to immediately be back on our date nights or our special moments. And even during that time, the say 6 weeks of really toughness, maybe in two different places, we still have these sweet texts we send that take 3 minutes, or we have a three breath hug if we're in the same place. Your identity being, we are people, or I am a person, because you can't drag your partner along on the relationship ride. That is their journey. But you know, what I love is the ideal when we can move toward it, which is both of us in our own unique ways are people who value our relationship enough to make it intentional and do stuff about it. Like we're talking about your health, your fitness, your well-being. Oh my goodness. All right. So habits, small ones, anchoring them to things that already happen in your day. Watching out for reasons that are legit that become excuses, all the buts and why it won't work for me. And also, like you, you know, I have a huge soft heart for all of us and the realities of a lot of this. We might well be exhausted, run down, pulled in many directions, not have a great deal of control of changing that right now. But within that, can you stand up while you're watching Netflix and stretch for 2 minutes? Can you pause something and walk and look out a window and take 3 deep breaths? What little moments of self-care can you take while you're maybe building towards more substantial moments or commitments of health and wellness? I don't know if you have any thoughts on that or any ways to help people with that.
Well, I just want to remind people that it's not an all or nothing switch that you turn on or off. It's like a dial that you turn up or down depending on what's going on. So a lot of times people are like, oh, what's the point if I can't go for my full run? I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to sit on the couch. And like you're saying, let's do a stretch or something like that. And you know, it's like with your relationship, like, oh, we can't have sex. The kids are around, but you still have like a little flirty bum tap. Like there's always little fun things you can do, little ways that you can remind yourself, or in this case, your partner, who you are, what your intentions are, you know, so you can say like, right, when I watch TV, I'm stretching. When I can't go for a run, I do these little things. So really, it's just remembering, don't go all or nothing on these things. If you do have the fries, you don't have to have all the fries. You can have a couple of fries. And that's not like, whoa, blew my diet now. It's just like, they're just a couple of fries. That does not change who you are. You're a healthy person.
And enjoy the hell out of them.
Yeah.
Eat them slowly and go, if it's your thing and you find it satisfying, enjoy the hell out of them. Like mindful eating, like those were delicious. Hubby and I were in Mexico for 2 weeks, as you know, just very recently. And we went to the place where we were married and we went to the place we honeymooned. And we went to this restaurant with the world's most erotic French toast. It is stuffed with like this creamy mixture of passion fruit and coconut. Unbelievable. Now, I don't eat dairy, don't eat grain, et cetera, basically at all, with the occasional chosen exception. So hubby had the French toast and I had 2 bites of it and I was completely and utterly satisfied. It was as gorgeous as I remembered, even though it's products I don't usually consume much. And I savored those bites and I was completely satiated, where I would have wanted, you know, a platter full before and eaten it more mindlessly and ended up kind of bloated and unwell and a bit of a sugar buzz afterward. So enjoy the hell out of the fries, choose them mindfully, and don't just have them because they're there.
And just remember, it's not all or nothing. If you get into the all or nothing mindset, what happens then is people tend to do the thing where they bin or they like, and it's people, it is so interesting. The people who are the hardest to create new habits are actually people who are really type A achiever types. They really have a lot of trouble designing and sticking with new habits because they're so all or nothing, because they won't allow the stretch instead of the run, because they think, okay, if I have one fry, then I'm at reset. I'm back at zero.
Right. I failed.
I have to start again.
I blew it.
And then they'll have like, you know, a weekend where they go and then they'll start again on Monday. And so I'm just saying it's not like that. It's a dial that you turn up and down. It's not a switch that goes on and off. It's never all or nothing. And it's just all these little incremental choices. And every single choice counts. Every single choice counts. And no choice is going to be a make or break.
That is so brilliant. Everybody, listen to the dial. I hadn't heard it put that way, Una. It's some of your unique brilliance is the languaging and the concepts you use. Never heard it put that way. And it's so helpful. Dial up, dial down. Maybe the dial flatlines a little bit. You get to move it as much as seems possible today. And then maybe a tiny little bit more. Okay, so I'd love to keep going for many more hours. I'm sure you'll be back on this podcast, but I would like to, and this is out of left field, everybody. Una doesn't know I'm going to do this.
Be afraid, be very afraid.
I'd like to ask you a couple of relationship advice questions from your lived experience as a longer-term partner to your beautiful partner. What would you say is your best relationship quality in your romantic relationship with your hubs? What is your best quality?
Oh, we are super playful all the time. We're so goofy and we're playful and flirty. We play fight. Sometimes if we're legit angry, we'll like play fight with each other and like wrestle on the bed. And it's really funny. I will flash him or moon him and he will moon me. Like we are so ridiculous. And basically we make each other laugh all the time and we're super goofy and playful.
So great. I know that you were at a Tony Robbins event once because that's where we first were in the same room. I didn't realize it. I was teaching some fun and crazy sex stuff and you were there as you've told me when we met now. And there's a Tony Robbins teacher called Joseph McClendon III, who you've probably seen, and he's got a book called Assitude. And my favorite thing I've ever learned about how to change your state is shake your ass. So Joseph's like, stand up and just shake your ass, shake your ass. So that's one my hubs and I do, especially if maybe the blonde one, that would be me, is a bit crabby or touchy or off. He's like, baby, shake your ass. So joy. I love that. Now, of course, you're probably anticipating, what would you say is your worst or least effective or more of a pain point quality as a couple or in your relationship these days, maybe, or maybe a historic one that you've improved, either is fine.
Yeah, I would say that when we get into discussions, they tend to be cyclical. So we haven't found a great way to be like, we need to put a pin in this now without the other person feeling like you mic dropped me. So that's a skill that we're learning to be like, hey, this conversation is going nowhere. And, you know, I don't think we're going to agree on this. And I hear your point. You hear my point. Like we're just going to keep repeating our points to each other. And so I know that that cycle's got to end, but I don't know how to end it without being like, I'm out and it make it feel like a mic drop.
That is such an articulate description of something 90% of people listening now relate to. They're called different things in the biz, but a perpetual problem, a repeating problem. It's, you know, the everything in the kitchen sink. We've had the same damn argument so many times and we can't get out of it. There are some techniques to help with that. The other side of the clock helps. And another exercise people teach in different ways, but I'll talk about this in a future podcast. I'll send you the link.
Thanks.
Make your hubby listen to it too, because you shouldn't be doing all the heavy lifting. I know you've got two glorious kids. Let's say they're, you know, how old are your kids?
11 and 13. Two boys.
Okay. So we're getting there. So when the boys are, you know, looking into their own romantic interests and him, her, they, whomever draws their interest, let's fast forward it. Let's say they're like more in their early 20s and they're maybe getting serious about love and commitment in some way that works for them. What would be one of your best romantic or relationship tips you would pass on to your kids or anybody else you cared about?
Wow. What would I say? I think in general, a good rule of thumb is that most people think about themselves too much and not the other person. And I mean that in a really, we are watching ourselves and critiquing ourselves and does he like me or am I good enough or what did he think that was weird and is he blah, blah, blah. And most of the time, like none of that is happening. And if you can focus on them and being genuinely curious about them and what makes them tick and what brings them joy and really like, take the focus off yourself. I think that you are going to be so much more fascinating if you're actually genuinely interested in them and what makes them tick and you're so curious. I mean, that's what's going to make someone fall in love with you. But if you're like constantly trying to angle and pose and be perfect and like you are just going to get so stressed out, you're going to be so unappealing. And so I would just say, don't do that. Just focus on them. Don't worry about yourself. And then you are going to absolutely magnet the right people if you're just shining your light bright on other people versus watching yourself the whole time.
Oh, that is so beautiful. And I titled my signature program, Become Passion. And it's really to that point you so wisely just put forward. Who can I become? Who can I become for you? Like your wedding vows in a lot of ways. Who can I become? How can I be a better partner? Would I date me now? 10 years in, 15 years in, 20 years in, are we being the great partner or are we wanting the other person to change? So your kids are lucky. They're going to get some wise advice. One final question. What is one thing you deeply appreciate about your mate?
Oh.
I suspect there's more than one, yeah. But what arises? One thing.
Oh, no. He's so funny. And he makes everything, like, going to the grocery store with Dill is, like, as fun as, you know, going on an adventure. Okay, when he picks me up at the airport, he will often hide behind one of those fake plants and jump out. So many times it's really embarrassing, but then I just die. Like, so playful, so funny. He just makes life way more fun. And he's a wicked DJ. So he always knows, like, perfect song to put on in the car and gets the mood exactly right, which is a really good quality to have in a partner.
I have kind of a little crush on your hubs right now. It's platonic, yeah, but just got to say. All right. Well, beautiful. Well, that brings us to my regret, I must say. It's been absolutely delightful toward the end of our program. And now I know everybody listening is going to be pretty excited to follow you. I want to give a big shout out to your podcast, to your book. I mentioned those in those intro. We're going to link to the podcast I was on below so you can find Una's podcast. But where can people find you? And I want them to know about your 28-day transformation challenge. Maybe you could give us the 2 minutes on that and where they can find you to follow up if they want to be in your world, getting this kind of amazing support to create maybe small but life-changing habits, one habit at a time.
Well, okay, so I'm going to set up a special thing at fitfeelsgood.com/Cheryl. And there I'm going to have a free training for you where it will walk you through step-by-step the process of picking the keystone habits that are going to make the most difference for you and really building out that habit loop for yourself and making it feel rewarding and awesome. And if you want, there's going to be an offer for my 28-day transformation program. I'm going to give you guys a wicked discount. So it's at fitfeelsgood.com/Cheryl. And the 28-day transformation program, dudes, I am going to, like, take you from yin yoga to doing, like, amazing CrossFit things that are going to surprise the shit out of you that you can do. I'm going to take you through a nutritional program this is all, like, designed by a dietitian that's going to really, like, strip you down to exactly the nutrients that you need. And then what we're going to do is we're going to build up from there and we're going to really get to know your body, how different foods affect you, and the results that people have during this transformation process. The most common thing that people say is, I have accomplished in the last month what I've been trying to accomplish in 10 years. And this is for people who are in perimenopause and menopause and people who have, like, tried everything. I got you. And you are also going to have access to a dietitian, physiotherapist. Like, you're going to have all of that is included. And I got you every step of the way.
It's so incredible. The price point is so low compared to what you would pay for a personal trainer, et cetera. And the link is wherever you're listening to this podcast. The link is in the show notes. But can you repeat it once more in case they're having trouble finding a clickable link because they're on the top of a mountain right now? Repeat what that link is going to be.
Oh, you're so sweet. It's fitfeelsgood.com/Cheryl.
There you go. C-H-E-R-Y-L. All right, my friends. Well, this brings us to this episode's Love Bite. Are you ready? I know that you are. Great relationship starts with a great you. Take care of your body. Take care of your sleep. Take care of your food to take care of your love. It's been an absolute incredible pleasure, Una. I look forward to some social hikes again and having you back on the podcast if you'll come back and share more of your wisdom. And everybody, I really, truly, you know, if you're a long-term listener, this is episode, I think, 149, 150. I've had all of 4 guests on so far, and I don't promote people's stuff. And then, well, I'm not promoting per se. I know brilliance when I see it. I know programs that are effective when I see and experience them. I know my 3-month couples program is effective. I strongly encourage you, if this resonates for you, to check out Una's stuff. And maybe you'll be emailing me and her in 28 days and telling us about your new relationship with yourself and how it's influencing your relationship with your sweetheart. Thanks so much, my dear.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I've loved it.
What a joy. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Sex, Love, and Elephants. But most of all, thank you for being part of this herd. If you enjoyed listening, please share this with a friend. And if you haven't already, I would love, love, love it if you would subscribe, rate, and review the show on your podcast player because it really helps all the other elephants find us. If you have any questions or comments or maybe an idea for the show or you'd like to be a guest, reach out to me directly at drcherylfraser.com, where you can also sign up for weekly Love Bites, science-based tips for creating love
and passion that last a lifetime.